It was not a day marked with fanfare, celebration, or even much announcement. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recently began the process of shooting barred owls on the Hoopa Valley Reservation near Arcata. Barred owls compete for territory and resources with spotted owls, which remain on the endangered species list. The barred owl killings are meant to give some living room to the spotted owls, and the killing of one animal to help another is clearly not without controversy. Last week, we heard from the group Friends of Animals about its opposition to the taking. Today, we hear from Paul Henson, who is the state supervisor for Oregon at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Paul, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for having me.
Take us back to square one, if you would, and why this move had to be made in the eyes of the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, there's a couple of main threats to the long-term recovery of the spotted owl. And one of those, of course, that we all know about real well because we've been dealing with it for the last 20 years or so, is conserving and restoring old-growth habitat that the spotted owl uses. Well, over the last 20 years or so, and certainly in the last 5 to 10 years, another threat has emerged, certainly as the most pressing short-term threat to the spotted owl, and that is competition with the recently arrived barred owl in the Pacific Northwest. And what we've taken is a strategy to address both of those threats concurrently. And the barred owl threat, you can save all the habitat you want for the spotted owl, but the barred owl threat will overwhelm the spotted owl if we don't do something about it, is pretty much what the science is telling us.
So even if you had laid aside like twice as much land for spotted owl habitat and carefully cultivated it and made it just right for spotted owls, the barred owls would still be pushing them out?
In all likelihood, yes. I heard Mr. Harris on your radio program a couple of days ago.
From Friends of Animals, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct, saying that the Fish and Wildlife Service was avoiding the difficult decision of supporting more habitat protection and instead going to what I think he was suggesting is the easier decision of removing barred owls. Well, in fact, the opposite is true, and he was in error on that. Our spotted owl recovery plan and our recent critical habitat rule explicitly call for protecting more habitat. And in fact, we doubled critical habitat from what it was previously, from 5 million acres to 10 million acres. And the recovery plan explicitly calls for protection of more habitat in order to try and accommodate both birds in that habitat. But at the same time, we recognize that absent some management or at least some investigation of whether you can, in fact, manage barred owls to help recover spotted owls, spotted owl recovery is just not feasible. And they will likely go extinct in large portions of their range, no matter how much habitat you set aside, if not their entire range.
When you mentioned time ranges in which the barred owl has become an issue, it sounds like they've really moved rather fast. Where did they come from?
Well, they're at least traditionally known to be native to the eastern North America and into the upper Midwest. They've moved slowly across the North American continent over the last century, and then during the last 20 years or so, were seen to found to be in spotted owl range in increasing numbers. I think the first sighting or record was 1959 that we had a barred owl sighted in the Pacific Northwest.
But it sounds like over the course of just a few years, they can move from place to place rather quickly. And what is the major advantage they hold over the spotted owl?
Well, they're larger. They're 15 to maybe 20-25% larger in size. They're much more of a generalist in terms of how they utilize their environment, in terms of food and habitat type. So they, like many generalist species, as opposed to more specialized species like spotted owl, they can do well in a variety of habitats and push out competing species that are close to them in habitat requirement. And they're also more aggressive and territorial.
So if nothing else, they do hold a size advantage over the spotted owl. Spotted owl, is it also somewhat more docile then?
Well, I don't know if I'd say docile. If you've handled a spotted owl, it can either seem tame or the talons are sharp and they're powerful animals. But given the more aggressive nature, the more generalist ability to survive in a variety of environments and utilize a wider food base, barred owls are more successful in those kinds of environments and in all likelihood would push out spotted owls out of much of their range.
So, Paul Henson, how long a process went on before deciding that taking of barred owls was probably a good maneuver to take?
Well, It's not. We haven't made that final decision that it's a a good maneuver to.
So this
take
is still a test
right.
process, right?
We're essentially testing it. I mean, the science is unambiguously clear that barred owls are suppressing spotted owls and truly inhibiting their recovery. Whether or not you can actually do anything about that, given the logistics, the cost. Other conflicts is still to be determined, and that's the purpose of this experimental approach. We first initiated the effort of consideration of this approach over 5 years ago in earnest with the Spotted Owl Recovery Plan being developed. We developed a barred owl working group that included a stakeholder group of a variety of interests, including a ethicist who led the group, which included environmental folks, included timber industry folks, included agency folks. We led them through this process of weighing the pros and cons, both the ethical as well as the sort of scientific challenges this this issue presents.
Who was the ethicist who led that?
That was a fellow named Bill Lynn, mm-hmm. who teaches in, I think, at Williams College in Massachusetts, and he's been involved in other other sort of wildlife conflict issues like wolf management and removing wolves if wolves are predating livestock and those kinds of things, and helping people sort of walk through the trade-offs that these dilemmas present. Because it isn't there's no sort of right or wrong answer here. There's what are the ethical trade-offs? For example, if we fail to control some barred owls and sort of infringe upon, let's say, the rights of individual barred owls, as Mr. Harris was talking about the other day. What about the sort of rights of the spotted owl as a species? What happens to if it goes extinct? And so those trade-offs. Failing to take action is a decision. Mr. Harris's group is litigating the government to try and stop this barred owl work. My guess is that if we fail to take action, we would also be litigated under the Endangered Species Act for failing to take actions to recover spotted owls when the science is so clear that something needs to be done.
But it really has gotten to that point where the people who have examined all the evidence look at it and say, look, we're not going to have spotted owls if we don't get rid of some of the barred owls.
Well, that's right. In British Columbia, spotted owls are almost extinct. And in fact, they've been controlling some barred owls up there and have removed barred owls and have had spotted owls come back, or they've been reintroducing captive spotted owls into these areas in British Columbia. Large portions of the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State and the Northern Cascade Range now have no spotted owls or just a very few pairs. Where 10 years ago, one of our study areas up there, you had 100 spotted owl pairs. Now you've got just a few. You've got under a dozen, and you've got hundreds of barred owl pairs. And this is in habitat that's relatively stable, like, for example, in Olympic National Park, where there's you can't blame it on habitat loss, the impacts to spotted owls. Anymore, because this is habitat that's protected. So it really is a barred owl issue.
We are talking to Paul Henson, who is the state supervisor for Oregon at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You can join our discussion about barred owls versus spotted owls here on the Jefferson Exchange. And I guess perhaps in fairness, we should stop setting that up as a either-or thing. But it is the issue here that barred owls are being shot to provide more territory for spotted owls. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Just in terms of strategy, Paul, is it you're seeking to take out in this test process a certain number of barred owls, or is it about keeping a certain territory free of barred owls? I mean, what are the general tactics being used here?
Well, as you know, the range of the spotted owl is quite large across the three states in Oregon, Washington, and California. And what we've identified are four relatively small areas in that range in the three states. And these are areas that are already, for the last 20 years, have been studied either wholly or partially for spotted owls. They're called demographic study areas, where we have a pretty good handle on what's happening to the spotted owl populations in those areas. So what we were proposing to do was to go into some of those areas and a subset of those areas and remove some barred owls from half of them, half the area, and use the other half as a control where we don't do any treatment of barred owl removal, and then see what happens with spotted owls. Do spotted owls come back? If they do come back, do they breed successfully? And so it's a relatively small subset of the overall range. If what we've seen, at least anecdotally, is in those areas, like I mentioned, British Columbia, and also in Northern California on private timberland, on the Green Diamond Company timberland, we've seen if barred owls are removed, spotted owls do come back relatively quickly.
When you say relatively quickly, what kind of time are we talking about?
Well, within that year.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes within months. Mm-hmm. And within the year, and these are sometimes spotted owls that have been not reproducing and have been kind of quiet or not vocal, and we didn't know they were there till the barred owls were removed and they showed up again and attempted to breed.
And in some cases, years later, I understand. I mean, spotted
right.
owls that used to occupy, and you knew these because they were banded, I guess.
Correct. They're banded, and the good news is, from the spotted owl perspective, is they're long-lived birds. They can live, 10 to 20 years. And so the fact that, a barred owl might push a spotted owl pair off a territory, and the spotted owls, like many birds, and especially raptors, have high fidelity to their nesting area and to their territory. And so they might stick around. They're not breeding successfully because that's a much more difficult sort of thing to pull off if you're competing with barred owls in your same territory. So they might be persisting and living around on the fringe of that habitat. And once the barred owls are removed, they can go back and try and breed.
So who are the people carrying out the work, the actual shooting of owls?
Well, we haven't. Right now, the work that's going on right now is on the Hoopa Indian Reservation in Northern California. And that's those are folks working for the tribe down there, with some advice from Fish and Wildlife Service, from Green Diamond Timber Company, and USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, Biological Resources Division researchers. We've partnered with our colleagues in USGS to help design and implement the scientific aspects of this work and the field logistics and the data collection, and they're going to help us implement the work as well. But we've not, in terms of the work that might occur next year, we've not finalized who's actually carrying out that work.
Any difficulty finding volunteers to take on the work, though, or has it even gotten to that point yet?
It hasn't really gotten to that point for pretty obvious reasons. We're going to be very selective about who carries out this work. They have to be well-trained in owl identification, firearm safety, and otherwise, just good, reliable field biologists.
And it really is something that that clearly causes some consternation to people in your line of work. I mean, you're supposed to be protecting animals, and yet here you're trying to protect one by killing another. And I was just reading this information you sent along from Lowell Diller, who wrote about the ethics of this and his own difficulty in pulling the trigger on a barred owl.
Yeah, that's right. These are people. Lowell is one. Myself and pretty much everyone in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and in state fish and wildlife agencies. Well, I know people will like to either generalize or stereotype folks. These are people that have dedicated their lives to conservation of birds and other fish and wildlife and environmental conservation in general. So this is a very, very difficult position for folks to be put in. These aren't activities that biologists would enjoy or want to carry out, as Lowell Diller has pointed out in that paper in the Wildlife Journal. I think for many of us, the only thing worse than shooting a barred owl would be sitting back and watching the spotted owl go extinct. And so if that's really the choice, for at least for me, both at a personal level and for me representing U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a professional level, both ethics and the law, the Endangered Species Act, compels us to take some action. And the other thing is this: while this is a pretty novel situation for the spotted owl, it's not a novel situation for conservation in general. This kind of work, unfortunately, has to go on and has been going on, for decades, all over the world, and certainly in the United States for years and years. In Oregon, throughout North America, and in many other environments. In Hawaii, I worked in Hawaii for a number of years, where there you might know there's an extinction crisis going on, and it's primarily the result of the introduction of non-native animals, feral pigs, mongoose, birds, that are competing and driving other plants and animals to extinction. And many other countries have also developed techniques and logistical operations to deal with this. New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, all these countries that have a lot of islands or rare species that are imperiled by introduction of non-native or invading even native species. Many species in your neck of the woods down there in southern Oregon as well, there's some kind of management going on to try and conserve one species because another species is impacting it tremendously.
Paul, can you stay with us about five more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Paul Hansen's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, State Supervisor for Oregon for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We're talking about killing barred owls so that spotted owls may survive as a species. Join us on the exchange as we discuss the issues, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Obviously, the public debate has been fierce. You've been aware of this all. I mean, has the debate been just as fierce within fish and wildlife then?
Well, I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't say it's fierce. I would say it's both somber and sober. This is a last resort, and we came to this position in some people's minds too slowly, given the intensity, the impact of barred owls on spotted owls, and in some people's minds, hopefully not too late. Given the momentum when these things start happening, there's a certain amount of sort of momentum or inertia that you have to kind of act upon. But I won't say that there's a lot of a disagreement within Fish and Wildlife Service, because if you're a trained biologist, a trained ecologist, and you work on populations of animals, you can pretty much see the handwriting on the wall here for the spotted owl if something's not done. So most biologists in Fish and Wildlife Service see the need here. Now, if there is a variety of opinion, it's about whether or not it's doable, whether or not it's logistically feasible, whether or not it's cost-effective, whether or not, because of the public controversy, there would be support to do it economically and politically. And that's really where the debate is, both internally and externally. And you mentioned Lowell Diller's paper. Lowell and some other colleagues in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have another paper coming out in a journal called the Wildlife Society Bulletin on actually the logistics and feasibility of doing this work. And at least in certain areas of the range, it's their conclusion of these scientists is that it is technically and logistically feasible to implement on a, you know, on a relatively small scale, but you might be able to identify certain areas where you could make spotted owls have a decent chance of coming back.
Well, that was part of the issue, though, was timing, wasn't it? Because there was a belief that if you didn't start soon, you would get to a point where the spotted owl simply couldn't pull out of a population dive.
Yeah, that's correct. This barred owl situation is kind of like an insult to injury. I know people tend to focus on the habitat issue, and rightly so. For essentially 150 years, humans have significantly modified the spotted owl's habitat through timber harvest and other habitat manipulation. And now the barred owl comes along, and so this insult to injury makes it even worse. And those things acting in concert, habitat loss and suppression of the remaining birds that are in the decent habitat that's left, is kind of a 1-2 punch for the spotted owl. And that's what we need to act on and act on sooner. Because if you don't, then you're in a situation like British Columbia is, or maybe now Washington State, where even if you conserve habitat and even if you manage some barred owls, if there aren't enough sort of a critical mass of spotted owls around to reproduce, they won't come back.
McGuire in Eugene is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Henson from Fish and Wildlife.
Hi, gentlemen. I live in Hawaii, and I think that I may have seen the white owl in Hawaii. I lived there 15 years. I think that there may be, but they should have a world program in Namibia for controlling the
Just to keep all the non-native species out?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm half awake here.
All right. Thanks for that, McGuire. Appreciate it. So is there much discussion across international boundaries of programs to try to keep invasive species from becoming invaders in other territory?
Yeah, that's right. There's very rigorous, interdiction programs run by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. For example, the brown tree snake in Guam was introduced into Guam from New Guinea through the U.S. military transport of cargo back and forth. And now Guam, which had, you know, a relatively robust bird population of a variety of species, only has a couple of birds left, a couple of native bird species left in Guam. In Hawaii, something similar has been going on. But it isn't just those islands, you know, far away, kind of, that people think of. The Channel Islands in California are a great example, run by the National Park Service. And Mr. Harris from Friends of Animal mentioned goat control on the Channel Islands, and there's been other control of other species there as well, feral pigs, for example. The Aleutian Islands up in Alaska, we've removed rats, we've removed fox, and now the Aleutian Canada goose, which you might know from the coast of Oregon and Northern California, and has been taken off the endangered species list because it was a listed species under the ESA. And once we removed the invading predators, egg predators primarily in that case, the geese recovered, and they're doing great. And probably we're going to be faced with a problem where we've got too many geese. And that's the kind of problem we'd like to have.
All right. Paul Henson's been our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the state supervisor for Oregon for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and heavily involved in the taking of barred owls to provide more territory for spotted owls. We'll be hearing a lot more about this down the road. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It was a pleasure.
You bet. We will take a short break and return with Garrison Keillor in today's edition of the Writer's Almanac, back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five.